Good afternoon, Juno. It's almost 3 p.m. It's time for another edition of a Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. And on the show, we'll be talking with Heather Mitchell, one of the organizers behind the upcoming Chocapalooza. We'll find out about next weekend's Mendenhall Flying Lions Barbecue with guest Neil Atkinson. The director of Wearable Art will probably be by to talk with us about mid-show. And Hillary Young will be here to talk about school district sources of strength program. We may even hear a short tale from former Juno Forest Ranger Pete Griffin. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and lots more for Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez in Anchorage, Alaska. Elders and youth are being encouraged to get up and stand up for a collective Alaska Native voice. People from across the state are gathered in Anchorage for the Elders and Youth Conference. It's put on annually by the First Alaskans Institute. Elder keynote speaker Fred John Jr. talked about protecting Native rights. His late mother, Katie John, led a lifelong legal battle for subsistence rights. John urged the crowd to continue to fight to protect traditional ways of life.
We don't want the state of Alaska to come in when our children are eating dinner, good moose meat, good seal, whale, you know, our food across the globe, across Alaska, different type of food that we enjoy eating. We don't want our children to sit there and look back over their shoulders afraid that somebody's going to take it away from them. We're going to stand up and we're going to fight for our right to eat our food.
Youth keynote speaker Devlin Anderstrom gave an address in Tlingit. In English, he told attendees he's proud of his ability to speak his language and says he connects his culture and ancestors through those words. Anderstrom encouraged young people to take time and study languages with elders.
All we have to do is we have to commit and we have to work together. Gaidinak, stand up. Akakunaisagao, fight for it. Hayuk atanki. Hakostiyi, our language, our way of life. Really fight for it.
Anderstrom is a senior at Yakutat High School and is a language apprentice and artist. Elders and youth were greeted by basketball star Shoni Schimmel. It was her first visit to Alaska. Schimmel, along with her mom and dad, spoke to the crowd about the importance of education. Schimmel, from the Umatilla Nation, gained a national following as a college basketball player for the Louisville Cardinals. She says she worked hard to achieve academic and athletic success. Schimmel told the audience about her experience overcoming a challenge at an all-star game.
Middle of the second quarter, and I'm sitting there having this talk, and I'm talking to myself, talking to Creator. I'm like, if I'm supposed to be here, if this is what I'm supposed to do, let me do what I'm supposed to do. Because the first quarter, the second quarter, I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do. You know, I wasn't saying nervous. I was just, you know, it was my first rodeo, so I was like, what am I doing kind of thing. And so, you know, I had that talk, and next thing I know, the end of the second quarter and the beginning of the third quarter were just a blur. I don't really remember what happened until I go back and watch the game, and I'm like, that's really what happened? I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Fourth quarter, I finally realized, hey, you're in a game. You need to win this game.
Schimmel now plays in the WNBA for the Atlanta Dream. Elders and youth spent Monday afternoon focusing on reviving Native languages. They heard from presenters like Grant Rebney, who's Atna Athabascan. He says language and culture go hand in hand, and it helps to understand where you're from.
Our culture created our languages. Now our languages reflect our culture. As I'm learning my language, as I'm learning my culture, I learn so much more by learning my language. It's in there. Indana huchinsia denda. Where do you come from? My sakai. To know my culture, I need to know where I'm from, where my family's from. Cantwell, then Keelan Na, the abundant ground, Valdez Creek, and then Cheri Na, before that, Chitna, and before that it was Terrell. The reason our people speak the way we speak is because where we are from.
Rebney says language revitalization includes speaking, sharing, and teaching Native languages every day. Throughout the day, attendees practice their language skills, including by breaking up into different language circles. The Elders and Youth Conference is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. The event wraps up on Wednesday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Built by Native Business for Native Business, the Native American Contractors Association B2B Conference and Expo, November 10th to 12th. Participants engage in discussion, build contacts, get federal contracting training, and business development. Registration at nativecontractors.org.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Go out and vote on November 4th. Voting on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And, or you can vote today like I did, took advantage of the early voting over at the Mendenhall Mall. And on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on KTOO, there will be a special talk of Alaska featuring gubernatorial candidate Bill Walker. But my first guest on the show today is a labor and management relations person for, she's the LMR person for UAS, and her name is Heather Mitchell, and she's here to talk about the upcoming Chuckapalooza. And I'd like to welcome her to the show. Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Is this the very first Chuckapalooza here?
This is. The University of Alaska Southeast Alumni and Friends Association. I'm the Alumni Relations Manager. This is a continuation of something we've done for many years. We've done a 101 series. The idea being is finding a fun event, a fun topic that alumni and friends want to learn more about, bringing it to the campus or perhaps taking campus professors and going out into the field and discovering something, learning something about it, and having a lot of fun. And that's been our 101 series. And in the fall, for many years, we've done a beer and wine tasting. And when we started the beer and wine tasting, our beer and wine 101, there weren't as many beer and wine tastings in town. And so we had a certain amount of sort of uniqueness, a little bit of cachet. And we had a great time and did it for a long time. But then this year we decided, you know, I think it's time for a change. Let's try something new. And I know that chocolate keeps coming up in the conversation. And so we decided, let's make this year Chocolate 101. And so our Chocolate 101 Chocapalooza, which is all things chocolate, is our big event that we're going to do this year. And it's on November 1st. It has several different aspects. So it's, you know, probably best to kind of go down the line of all the things that we're going to offer at our event.
Well, let's talk about all the things that you're going to offer, including the guest speakers. I didn't know there were going to be guest speakers. This is great.
I know. You're thinking, okay, chocolate, what would you have for guest
speakers? It's like Willy Wonka. You should show up.
Well, you know, I called Willy, and he really wanted to get there, and he just is just too busy to get up. But he did provide us with another great little tag at the end of our program that I'm sure everyone's going to love. But what we did is we went ahead and contacted some of our chemistry professors and some chocolatiers, and we're going to have them speaking about the chemistry of chocolate, the chemical properties of chocolate, how to use it, what it is, what it does, why we love it, why we want to eat it all the time. And so it's going to be that wonderful sort of edutainment spin, the ability to provide a little bit of education with our entertainment. And so we'll be using the Egan Lecture Hall to provide some of these presentations, as well as some video presentations that talk about the history and uses of chocolate.
Okay, and it also says that we're going to have some live music. Who is coming to perform?
Doug Bridges is going to be bringing a three-piece jazz trio, and he promised me when I talked to him in the fall, or earlier in the fall, that he was going to come up with a fun chocolatey name, but he hasn't told me yet what he's going to name himself. So, you know, my three-piece jazz band of chocolatey origin will be joining us on the 1st.
All right, and there's also going to be a dessert contest. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. What we wanted to do is not only have demonstrations and have some talking and, of course, lots of tasting of chocolate and chocolate-based things, but we wanted to give everybody in town, caterers, restaurateurs, chefs, an opportunity for you know, for bragging rights to come and give us their chocolate creations and then let us have our very carefully selected judges panel go ahead and judge them to see who has the best chocolate creation in town. And so we've got several municipal, we've got some dignitaries, we've got some of our student leaders, some of our faculty leaders, and of course city leaders to help us judge that event.
And we would not be doing our business without saying who is coming here to sponsor this event, because there are several sponsors and we want to give them credit. So
we do. We have several vendors in town. You can see K&L Distributors will be coming and helping us with the spirits portion. We'll also be testing out several different chocolate-based alcoholic beverage creations. And so they'll be bringing some of those, as well as pairings with beers and wines. We'll also be having some assistance from Alaska Brewing with some of their beers. And Breeze Inn and Heritage Coffee. Heritage Coffee is going to be doing chocolate-based coffee drinks for us. And Specialty Imports will also be helping us with some of those really naughty drinks. Abby's Kitchen is going to be providing us with our catering. So for when you do need to take a small break from the chocolate, you'll have some other good nibbles to pace yourself with. So it's going to be great. We're going to also have a really fun contest, and this is in part thanks to Seattle Chocolates for partnering with us. We will have when you come in and you come to the program, you're going to be given a passport, and so you're going to get to explore the world of chocolate, literally. So as you go to different tasting stations, as you go to different demonstration stations, as you see different things, you're going to get stamps in your passport. If you complete all the stations, then you get a chocolate bar. It'll be a Seattle chocolate bar, and two lucky chocolate bar recipients will find the golden ticket in their chocolate bar.
This is exactly like Willy Wonka and
exactly.
The Chocolate Factory.
So Willy couldn't be there, but he gave us this idea that we should really use for our event. And so two lucky people who get those chocolate bars will get an Alaska Airlines voucher, which would be good for use anywhere that Alaska Airlines flies.
So you don't get to tour Wonka's Chocolate Factory, but you do get to fly anywhere Alaska Airlines goes.
Exactly. You could go to Maui and not worry about whether or not you got to tour
who
the factory.
Cares about the chocolate then? Coconut and papaya and stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. And let's talk about the date and time and mm-hmm. also the cost for admission, because I noticed we have that as well.
Absolutely. So we offer events that are for members of the Alumni Association, but for the entire town. And so we have, for those people who have an active Alumni and Friends membership, the cost to come is $75. And for those of our UAS students who belong to our Student Alumni Association, which is a chapter of our Alumni Association, they're able to attend for $50 per ticket. For everybody else in town, if you're not a member, it's okay. You can buy a general admission ticket, and those are $90 each. We are going to we're going to limit it to 300 tickets that we're going to have. And the only real requirement that everyone has to understand is we're going to have lots of drinks there that are alcoholic. So it would only be for those guests who are 21 and over. So our event is on Saturday, November 1st. And this is the day after Halloween. I've been telling all my friends, don't filch anything out of the kids' bags on Friday night. You don't need it. You wait until Saturday, the first.
Maybe just one little like Snickers
okay,
miniature
maybe one,
or something.
But just really an appetizer, because Halloween for grown-ups is going to be on November 1st, and it'll be 6:30 to 9:30 at the UAS Egan classroom wing, and we're taking over most of that side of the building. Pretty much almost everything but the library is ours for the night. So we'll be in the lecture hall, we'll be in the Glacier View rooms, we'll be in most of the classrooms. On the top floor, and then all the common areas. So it's going to be quite the to-do.
Well, this sounds yummy. Okay.
Yeah.
And since there's two golden tickets out of the 300, that's not too bad odds for winning a round trip.
No, your odds are pretty good. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's like you got one in 150. That's usually better than most contests.
I was going to say, and you're going to get so much fun for your money just being able to come to the event, because there's so much stuff to do. You'll be able to wander around and not get bored, you may actually, really have to be concentrating on making sure you hit everything,
time. Well, before we let you go, what is your favorite chocolate?
Oh, super, super dark with toffee bits and sea salt.
Ooh, okay. My wife loves those little Dove chocolates.
Oh, yes.
And I'm kind of fond of the the Hershey's Symphony bars, especially the toffee version. So.
Oh, absolutely.
This sounds good. All right, everybody, get your tickets. And there is a phone number for them to call if they want information or tickets. And let's go over that there, Heather.
Absolutely. So you would be calling me at the alumni office at the university. So if you want to buy tickets, you can call 796-6569. You can also send email to our alumni association at uas.alaska.edu. And I can go ahead and take your information via email and then follow up with you that way. Or go to our alumni and friends website on the UAS website and find all the information there as well.
All right, Heather Mitchell, thank you very much for being our first guest on the show.
Well, thanks.
And here's the Chenille Sisters with their song, Chocolate.
Chocolate is great, chocolate is grand. Melts in your mouth, melts in your hand. Chocolate is love. Mm-hmm. Chocolate is here. Chocolate is now, beans from Brazil, milk from the cow. Chocolate is love. Mm-hmm. Please don't mention the chemical connection chocolate makes in my head. It's Swiss Miss, I'm drinking, eating Hershey bars and thinking, if I can't be in love, I'll have a truffle instead. Cocoa is warm, fudgesicles chill. Whatever the form, it's always a thrill. Chocolate is love. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, chocolate is a big part of our lives. And we'd like to share with you now our testimonials in the hopes that each and every one of you will accept chocolate into your lives. Chunky when I feel funky. A Toll House cookie is better than Nookie. N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Nestle's makes the very best. Chocolate is love. Mm-hmm. Please don't mention the chemical connection chocolate makes in my head. It's Swiss Miss, I'm drinking, eating Hershey bars and truffle instead. Cocoa is warm, fudgesicles chill. Whatever the form, it's always a thrill. Chocolate is love.
Support for programming on this station comes from Bill Walker and Byron Malott, candidates for governor and lieutenant governor of Alaska. This message is paid for by Walker Malott for Alaska.
It's 3:17. Juno Afternoon continues with my next guests, Neil Atkinson and Mike Norton, and they're here to talk about next weekend's Mendenhall Flying Lions barbecue. Welcome, both of you, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right, let's talk about a barbecue.
Okay. Next Saturday from noon till whenever we run out of food, we'll have smoked ribs for our November Diabetes Awareness Month campaign. Our funds will go towards the American Diabetes Association. It'll be out at McGivney's in the Mendenhall Mall. And it'll be our 19th year for this event. We've had it, at the same location all that time. Plates or ribs will be $15, and racks of ribs are $40. And you can either dine in or take out. We have sides we'll set up so you can take the food away if you want to do that. And we'd like to, Teddy's Tasty Meats out of Anchorage is donating the meat. They're getting that flown down. Plus Super Bear, Food Services of America, Alaskan Brewing, Cisco Foods, and McGivney's, of course. And Fatmo's is doing do the cooking for us this year. So we're all excited, ready to go.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about Diabetes Awareness Month, though.
Okay.
Let's as far as you can, enlighten us about the three different types of diabetes.
That's a tough one for
you
me.
If you don't get it, I'll talk a little bit about it.
Okay. There's, I know the type 1, type 2.
Type 1 is what my sister had, which is juvenile onset diabetes, which you get, you know, generally young. Most of the people show up with it in their early teens. And sometimes it can happen as late as 30 years old, though. And the pancreas either produces little to no insulin, and you're either on an insulin pump or injectables, which my sister was on for a while until she got a pancreas transplant, which actually works really good if you get typed correctly. And, you know, they try and match like five different factors when they get down to it.
Great.
And that would be the type 1 diabetes was kind of what she's got.
That was what my dad had. He had type 1 before he, you know.
Okay. And type 2. Now, there's a lot of people that are starting to come down with type 2. And let's, you know, kind of cover a little bit why. It looks like most of these people, either you resist the effects of the insulin that your body produces, or you don't make enough in order to handle the normal blood sugar levels that you've got. So that's the second one. And a lot of people are getting that because of the way they eat. They may not be eating you know, good things for them, and or taking in way too much sugar.
Overweight.
For your body to produce insulin to handle it, yeah. Because what you don't, what your body doesn't burn right away, it just happily stores as fat, which is, you know, everybody gets a certain amount of that, but, you know, some people have a lot more than others, and, you know, I'm kind of one of the ones that fall in the latter category. But, and then we have a few other different kinds of diabetes that are either chemically or surgically induced. So, you know, there's a few other forms that are out there. But this is all because of Diabetes Awareness Month that you're having the barbecue, right?
Correct. And some of the funds along with that, all the funds go to the American Diabetes Association, and part of the funds the American Diabetes Association brings back into Juneau to take kids to a camp in Anchorage, a diabetes camp, so that they can learn that they're not the only ones out there, you know, that there are other kids have that. So they communicate and, you know, interact with other kids that have the same thing, so that they don't feel bad about having to have the pump or having the attention. You know, that they feel like they're in the norm with everything else going on. So that's
some of our money has gone towards approximately five kids in the last 2 years going to this camp, and it's we get real good reports back from the parents that they had a great time, and they're often left out of going to a regular camp because of their medical condition, and there's a medical personnel totally monitoring these kids while they're there.
Yeah, it's a little bit more intensive than some of the camps that we have around here.
Yeah.
All right, and Flying Lions, I asked right before we got back on the air, what's the difference between the regular Lions Club and the Flying Lions?
Name only, really. Lions clubs are international. There's 1.3 million lions around the world. There's two clubs in Juneau, the Juneau Lions Club and the Juneau Mendenhall Flying Lions Club, which we are part of, based on community service. We formed in 1917, and in 1925, Helen Keller challenged lions around the world to be Knights of the Blind. So part of that, since diabetes is one of the number one causes of blindness in people, that's been one of the things that we work with, you know, helping fight diabetes and the preventable blindness.
Okay. And again, you guys are getting a lot of this stuff. The meat is being donated and flown from Anchorage.
Correct.
Wow, that's not cheap to do that. Who's flying that over here?
One of our members has a connection, and Anchorage has sent down the meat in the past, but we're getting it this time on our own. But Teddy's Tasty Meats in Anchorage, it's hard to publicize them because they won't hear the publications, but they always step forward for Lions in providing our meat. They've done this for 10 or 12 years, providing us with the meat, if not longer than that, providing us with the meat to do this project. So it's like, you know, 300 pounds.
And it's all coordinated through the American Diabetes Association in Anchorage.
Yep.
All right. And let's highlight again exactly where it's going to be and Is there a cost to get in, or is it going to be donations, or what would you like?
It's at McGivney's Sports Bar in the Mendenhall Mall, and there's the cost, $15 per plate, or you know either eat in or take out, and we also have racks of ribs available to take out for $40. We'll have sides of potato salad and beans. And the thing that we're adding in this year to make it a real barbecue is that we will have apple pie and ice cream as a dessert, you know, for additional cost. And Alaska Brewing is also donating a keg, so the sales from that keg of beer will also go to the American Diabetes Association.
All right, fabulous.
And it starts at noon, and it'll go until we run out. We've got, about 280 pounds of ribs coming, so...
Okay, and it's at McGivney's, and it's not this Saturday, but it's next Saturday,
November,
right?
1st. Yep. November 1st.
Okay, very good. Mike Norton and Neil Atkinson, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 21st of October, 2014. It's the birthday of Samuel Taylor Coleridge, born in Ottery, St. Mary, England, 1772. He and William Wordsworth became close friends. They lived close to each other, went for daily walks, and it was between the fall of 1797 and the spring of 1798, when he saw Wordsworth every day, that Coleridge wrote his most famous poems, Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Kubla Khan, Christabel. In 1620, on this date, the explorer Ferdinand Magellan first entered the Strait of Magellan down around the Cape of Good Hope, heading for the Spice Islands in the South Pacific. The spice trade was important to the Spanish and the Portuguese, looking for cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, black pepper. The Portuguese came down around Africa, around the Cape of Good Hope, and Magellan was the first to come around South America. 1940, on this date, Ernest Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls was published, about Robert Jordan, the American teacher who goes to fight in the Spanish Civil War. He's wounded in battle, thinks about shooting himself to end his pain, but when the enemy comes into sight, he delays their approach so that his own comrades can escape to safety, and then he dies. And it's the birthday of Ursula K. Le Guin, born Berkeley, California, 1929. She was married with two young children when she was in her early 30s, trying to make her way as a writer, writing after the kids were in bed. Her poems were accepted, but her fiction was rejected over and over. And then she sold a story to a pulp science fiction magazine, Fantastic, which paid her $30. And she decided that if science fiction was what paid, then that was what she would write. She set out to write a novel about a planet of androgynous beings who choose a gender briefly once a month and live in a society that's never engaged in war. And even though most science fiction back then was written for men, the novel came out, The Left Hand of Darkness, and it was a great success. Here's a poem for today by Michael Blumenthal. I think constantly of those who were truly great. And to be perfectly honest, it bums me out. So many great ones, libidinal heroes, idealists, warrior chieftains, revolutionaries, fabulists of all sorts, even the great Irish pig farmers and Armenian raisin growers. And who, I ask myself, am I, by comparison, calmed by Valium, urged on by Viagra, uplifted by Prozac, I go about my daily rounds, a quotidian member of the quotidian hierarchy, a Perseus with neither a war nor a best friend, and sink to the depths of despair on the broken wings of my own mundanity. If only some god had given me greatness, I surely would have made something of it, perhaps a loftier, more humble poem than this, or some übermenschliche gesture that would reveal my superiority to the ordinary beings and things of this world. But here I am now, one of the earth's mere Sancho Panzas, leading those heroic others through the world on their magnificent horses, merely turning the page, dreaming my own small deeds into their magnificent arms. A poem by Michael Blumenthal, I think constantly of those who were truly great, from No Hurry, Poems 2000-2012, published by Etruscan Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:30, and a Juno Afternoon continues with my next guest, Nancy DeCherney, and she's here from the Jack. Usually she's in on Thursdays for Arts Up with Shauna Strausser, but I'm happy to have her on Tuesday with me right now. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we have a special event that's happening tomorrow, so I'm glad to have the opportunity to let people know it's wearable art season. And as part of that, we have a Meet the Director meeting that's happening tomorrow. So if you're thinking about being part of wearable art or you're thinking about getting involved at some level, we would really like to have you come and chat with our director who, as you probably know, this year everything is completely new. Our Jeremy and Jason Bauer Clifton, who for a long, long time did the all of the artistic direction, decided to retire. It's a lot of work, and they stepped down. And so we're taking things in a new direction. Sean Boiley from Northwind Architects, who has been part of the construction team for many, many years, is taking on the design part of the whole thing. And Hannah Wolf, who is a local girl, grew up here, has gone off to become a theater major person. She directed Blue Bear for Perseverance Theater, is going to be our director this year. She's going to be Skyping in from New York City to talk to us about her vision for wearable art. The theme this year is juxtaposition. So it's fairly open, and as usual, you're not required to do anything on the theme if you don't want to. But this is your opportunity to find out when you register, when the tickets are going to go on sale, talk to Hannah about ideas, and just learn what it's going to be all about. So, you know, you're going to be in it, right?
Yeah. We'll see here. Okay, Nancy, how many years have we been doing this in Juneau now?
You know, it's countless years at this point. I think we're at 14 or 15. I'm not absolutely positive anymore. And the very first one was up in where Rockwell is. That was a long time ago. And then they did it at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall when it was the A&B Hall for a couple years. But we've been at Centennial Hall since then. And it just has really become the biggest thing. Now, this year, as I said, things are changed up. The runway is a completely different configuration. It has for years been sort of a T, and everybody thought they knew where their favorite tables are and chairs. Not so. You're not going to know. It's all different this year. So I'm working on getting the new seating arrangement set up for the ticketing. I suspect we'll be able to put tickets on sale to Arts Council members December 1st, but I'm hoping to have there will be sort of a pre-show purchase for the people who are the artists and those sorts of people a little bit before then. One of the little benefits of being an artist.
Okay, and when is the actual show going to take place?
It's February 14th, also known as Valentine's Day, and February 15th. So it's a really, and I believe that's a long weekend. So it's a nice holiday, a great Valentine gift for your special person. In the new design, there are more tables than there previously were. So I think this is going to be a really exciting a new and exciting wearable art. I'm getting all excited thinking about it, actually.
Okay.
So we're doing a lot of pre-planning at this point.
Uh-huh. It always starts. We start the plans for it in October. There's a team of, 13 or 14 people, people working on video, people working on music, people working on design, people working on just coordinating all sorts of stuff. I believe that the volunteer slots will go up pretty soon, so if people are interested in being volunteers, make sure you're on our volunteer call list. You can get onto our website, and there's a place called Join, and it has a little volunteer button, and you can go there and get on that. Connected with the Wearable Art Show, of course, is a big silent auction. It's a really wonderful time to do some shopping with really crazy stuff in it, and it's also a nice time if you happen to have a business to get the information out about your things that you offer in the community. So we'll be out asking people for contributions for that, and we'll hope that everybody will come and just have a really great time. It's just, when I first started in this position many years ago, somebody came in and to get their wearable art tickets and said, that's Juno's favorite holiday. So it's just really a thing. And, you know, we have artists, Dave Walker, and this year Jenna Smith Gonzalez went to New Zealand, which is the mother lode of wearable art. David has won best in the world with his things. And so we have some pretty talented folks here. It's lots of fun. I hope you're coming.
All right. Well, Nancy, thank you very much for being my guest on the show. And as always, thank you for everything that you do with the Jack. And
well, thank you.
If you get to see Catherine, tell her I said hi. She does a lot to help me plug the planetarium.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. And we'll be right back after a Beatles song, and the show will continue.
Places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places had their moments with lovers and friends. I still can recall.
Is Bird Note. Among the most evocative sounds of early autumn are the voices of migratory geese flying high overhead in V formation. The migrating Canada geese heard here are returning from nesting in Canada and Alaska. But what about that V formation, angling outward like a ship's wake through the sky? This phenomenon, a kind of synchronized aerial tailgating, marks the flight of flocks of larger birds, like geese or pelicans, but isn't seen in smaller birds like robins or sandpipers. Most observers believe there's a straightforward reason for flying in a V. Each bird behind the leader is taking advantage of the lift of a corkscrew of air coming off the wingtips of the bird in front. This corkscrew updraft is called a tip vortex. Such efficiency enables the geese to save considerable energy during long flights. The V formation may also enhance birds' ability to see and hear each other, thus avoiding mid-air collisions. So migrating birds that do form V formations combine the benefits of aerial updrafts and communication. Small birds probably do not create enough of an updraft to help others in the flock and don't fly in V formation. Learn more about the aerodynamics of flight on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Sam Keto, Democratic candidate for State House. Paid for by Sam Keto for State House.
All right, a Juno afternoon continues. It's 3:40 p.m., and right now I've got a packed studio here because I've actually got four guests that have shown up. Hillary Young is here to talk about the Sources of Strength program in Juno Secondary Schools, and with her is two students from schools here, Jillian Smith, Jacob Walker, and I've also got Esther Smith, who's the she's the preventative advocate at AWARE, if I've got that correct. All right, Esther's just nodding at me. Okay. Welcome all of you to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Hillary, you're up. Let's talk about the Sources of Strength program. What is it?
Sure. So Sources of Strength is a prevention program that we started a couple years ago. It's aimed at it started out as a program aimed at preventing suicide, and we have broadened it in Juno to focus on preventing all different types of things, whether that's substance abuse or bullying or violence or suicide or whatever it might be. So we're using it in a broader effort here. And basically the program identifies a cross-section of students. So we try to get students from every different social group represented across the schools and then train them to become peer leaders. And then as peer leaders, they go back into the schools and they do a variety of different messaging activities to kind of spread positivity throughout the school and create a more positive environment.
Okay, this is right up my alley because I actually did this in high school.
Oh,
okay,
perfect.
I was a peer counselor. Okay, what they did was they trained us in order to be able to talk to other students, and some of the highlights of what we got to do was we actually went to a morgue to see what happens when when people overdose or commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And then we went to a methadone clinic in Eagleville, Pennsylvania, in order to talk to recovering addicts and get their perspective on, what happened to them, how they got into substance abuse. And, it's really eye-opening, mm-hmm. So for the two that have shown up here, who I'm assuming have gone through some kind of similar training, but maybe didn't get to go to the morgue or anything like that.
nothing quite that intense.
All right. Jillian, you're on the end here. Tell us a little bit about the training that you undertook.
Oh, the training was really fun. I thought it was really great. We played a variety of games with sort of an inner message. For example, we played a game where a scenario was listed, and it was kind of a debate game. We would go on one side if we thought we should do one thing and a different side for another. And it was really interesting to hear the opinions of all of the peers, and the whole training, it was really great and eye-opening that so many people cared.
All right. Jacob, about the same experience for you too?
Our training was, Esther was there. We went to like a church, and there were some like like counselor type people there who basically gave us the rundown on what Sources of Strength is about, and we did some like interactive things and tried to think of ideas to help out the community and the school specifically for Yakus.
Okay, Jillian and Jacob, this question's for you is then, what makes people, especially young people, so vulnerable?
Peer pressure. Probably.
Definitely. I mean, young people are going through so much change, and they're not sure who they're going to become, and so different people's opinions on who they should become can be very pressuring. So this is really great to push them into the right direction of becoming a great peer leader.
Okay, and yeah, I feel for you guys because unlike my generation where, you know, you kind of left school for the day, it was over. You know, now with the internet and cell phones, you know, text messaging, the young people are hooked up nearly 24 hours a day. So you constantly get bombarded, you know, from peers at other times when the rest of us that are a little bit older would have been like, oh, wow, that's over for today. I'm out of it. So, you know, it's a way different world for you. You've got way too many connections, I think.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Okay, Jillian's agreeing with me here. All right. Hillary, let's talk about some of the factors that contribute to feelings and thoughts that lead people to suicide, especially young people.
I got
Hillary's on the spot here.
there's a lot of different factors and kind of like warning signs, you know, that we talk about. So we talk about if there's a change, like a sudden change in behavior, or if friend groups are changing. So if students are used to hanging out with a certain group and then they start either hanging out with a different group or just isolating and not hanging out with anyone. There could be, if they start using drugs or alcohol, that could be another warning sign. They might have their appearance be a little different. They might not be as well kept. You can see changes in appetite or sleeping. They might want to sleep all the time, or they might have a hard time falling asleep. They might not be able to get up in the morning. With appetite, they might be eating all the time, or they might just completely lose their appetite too. Those are some of the warning signs.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about how families influence, you know, the young, especially, you know, as far as parents treating their children, or, you know, in a lot of ways, I think we're also distracted by several things and don't necessarily pay attention. You know, I've seen TV shows where, like, everybody's got their smartphone out and they're all texting to other people. They're all sitting at the dinner table, but nobody's interacting with each mm-hmm. other. They're all interacting with other people that aren't even there.
Yeah, I've definitely heard thoughts about how with the new kind of technology era, how it creates kind of disconnection and how that could lead to some depression or whatnot. One thing that we really like to talk about at Sources of Strength is spreading messages of hope, help, and strength. And so unlike, like you said, how you went to the morgue and stuff, that's kind of more of like a really like shocking take for students. And what research has shown is that for some people that is really effective, but for the people that are the most in need or the most vulnerable, it just it doesn't help them at all. It just kind of keeps them within what they're already thinking or feeling, or it ends up normalizing that for them. And so at Sources of Strength, we really try to flip it around and really make sure that all of our messages and activities talk about, you know, that connection or being able to find that connection with family or friends, and are geared towards hope and a positive outlook.
All right. Well, with so many connections that we've got with the internet and cell phones and that, what leads to so much isolation? Oh, wait a minute. Did I stump you again? Come on here. Okay, Jillian, what do you think leads to, you know, to isolation in an area where we've got so many connections with internet and phones and whatnot?
I think something about internet connections is they're not always true connections. I mean, you could have 200 Facebook friends and zero real friends. And so you really do need those positive friends and those family support in real life. And even though social media gives you so many connections, they're not always true connections, and that's what you do need.
Okay. Jacob, any thoughts on that?
I think it becomes more of a personal isolation rather than nobody's talking to you. You just kind of shut everyone out, you know.
So you think it's more like the young are tending to withdraw when they – do you think that is because they feel overwhelmed that they don't have any, you know, good outlet for dealing with what they've got and nobody to talk to?
Yeah, they just don't want to talk to people. They want to try to figure it all out themselves.
And what you probably figured out through the training is most of the times you can't.
Yep.
Even adults, we wind up using whatever resources that we have available. And, you know, I think that's a lot of the hesitancy is just talking to somebody that's a good friend of yours, you know, just opening up the conversation or making a call to an agency that can help you. Okay, Esther, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to that. One of the incredible things about Sources of Strength is how it emphasizes, a really excellent mentorship and relationship between youth, so peer leaders, and adult advisors in the program. So, when we talk about some of the challenges that youth face, one of those things is we know that there's codes of silence, and a lot of youth don't feel like they have adults in their lives that they can trust to talk about really hard things that they're going through. And then, you know, when they do have adults that they can trust, that makes a huge difference. And so the program, which is really, really cool, emphasizes the idea that one of the sources of strength, and there are 8 of them, is having mentors, you know, mentors in your life who you can talk to about these things, and adults who have wisdom and experience and the ability to talk you through some difficult times and help you strengthen your life in a way that sometimes teens don't know how to help their friends in the same way, or it's a lot of pressure for youth. So that relationship's really critical.
Definitely. I had somebody that actually mentored me a little bit when I was going through high school, and got me interested in an aviation-related career, which I hadn't really considered before that, but, you know, actually, you know, was a flying instructor, and he sat down with me and said, look, kid, if you're going in the Air Force, which is what I did, he said, there's only 2 jobs you want to do. And he told me what they were, and sure enough, I wound up qualified for something that was a really good fit for me. But it could have gone totally the other direction if I hadn't had somebody that gave me just a little bit of, you know, orientation in another direction and helped me move along.
And I think just to add on to that, one of the really important things about the program is the partnership that it has between the youth and the adults, because oftentimes youth are going to go and talk to their friends about whatever's going on before they're going to go and talk to an adult, and they're probably going to listen to their friend more than they might listen to an adult. And so it's really a critical component of the program to make sure that we train these students in the sources of strength, and then have the students act as connectors to adults so that they don't have to feel the pressure to take on or fix their friend's problem all on their own, but that they know adults who can help them and adults who they trust that can really help their friend with their problem and help them get better.
All right. Jillian and Jacob, I guess this one's for you. As you go through your normal everyday lives, do you find that if an adult steps in and, you know, offers you advice or help, that you're more inclined to take it? Or, you know, do you need to have some kind of background before you respect something that an adult is saying that you don't really know? Or, you know, how does that work? And do they seem a little bit more trustworthy than your own parents?
I think it depends on the status of said person. Like if some guy on the street kind of walked up to me and is like, hey, this is how you should do this and this, I'd be kind of like, that's weird. I don't want to talk to you. But like if a teacher was like in a classroom and they're like, I think this will help you pass all your classes and all that, and then I'd probably trust them more.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely trusting in all of the JDHS teachers and counselors. I think they all are very respect-worthy, and they also respect the students. And I also trust my parents' opinion a lot, and family support is a really strong strength for me. So mentors are definitely big.
Okay. Jillian and Jacob, my train of thought got derailed here. All right. I was going to ask you, just in general, do you think that adults have a good handle on what's going on in their lives as opposed to younger people, or do you think that we're still pretty clueless and still trying to figure it out?
I think they at least have more experience since they've had more years to...
We've gone through the hard knocks, yeah. Uh-huh.
Definitely, experience really helps judgment, so I do think that they do have more of a handle, and so we should trust their experience.
All right, Hillary, got anything to add as we close?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to talk about a few things really quickly. I wanted to go over what the eight sources of strength are.
Sure.
So family support, positive friends, mentors, healthy activities, generosity, spirituality, medical access, and mental health are kind of the different areas that we found. And Sources of Strength did some research initially when they were starting the program, and they went around and they surveyed people and asked them, you know, what helped you get through, you know, this really tough time? And they basically, everyone that they surveyed had said these were the areas and that kept on coming back up. And so that's how the program was created around that. And so one of the things that the program teaches is that, you know, everyone is going to go through a hard time at some point in their life. And the more of these sources of strength you have, the easier it's going to be to get through those times.
Okay. We're doing good talking about this. So I'm going to throw in one more item. How does bullying play into all this? And do you experience it, or have you? I guess this is for Jillian and Jacob.
Bullying can definitely lead to other serious issues such as depression or isolation. And with these sources of strength, that can kind of help you. If you are bullied, it will help you get through bullying. And these sources of strength will also show if bullies did have these sources of strength, they probably wouldn't be bullies. And so that's definitely a big thing. Yeah,
I think it all goes back to the peer pressure and wanting everyone to like you. And if someone's actually like physically picking on you or, you know, saying bad things, it kind of hurts.
Okay. Well, Jillian and Jacob, thank you very much for stepping up. I admire everything that you're doing. And Esther and Hillary, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today. It was a great topic.
Thank you.
All right, and since mean people suck, I'm playing one song by the Beatles, which is All You Need Is Love.
Thank you.
was the Beatles with All You Need Is Love. Okay, I suppose I can get to tonight's forecast as my guests are leaving the studio, and it was great having them. Tonight, rain likely with lows in the upper 40s to low, yeah, I guess mid to upper 40s, and east winds at 10 to 15 near downtown Juneau and Douglas, and northeast winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour with gusts to 35. In the evening, becoming southeast at 10 to 15 late. Tomorrow, rain showers likely with highs in the mid 40s. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau, rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion in Nicey Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Digital digital Channel 871. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host for Tuesday, and All Things Considered is coming up next. Have a great day, everybody.
You're starting to see complex attacks where an IED may trigger an ambush for a small arms attack.
Fighters for the self-styled Islamic State have changed their tactics on the battlefield.
It's Tuesday, October 21st, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, we'll hear about how young men are recruited to fight in distant civil wars.
One scholar says it's been going on for centuries, but the pitch is usually the same.
What recruiters do offer them is the imperative of defending some transnational identity group. They tell them to forget their citizenship, and they offer